At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of Silver Screen Podcast Cinema Classics. I'm your host, Mike, regularly here, and joining me, as always, is my trusty co-host, DK.
Hello.
Today we're taking a ringside seat to revisit the knockout 1978 Academy Award-winning film, Rocky. And guess what? We've got special guests in the house. Both of them have been on the podcast before. Connor from Pasty Sheep is here to help us go the distance from the Nerd Bible podcast. You'll have heard him just recently on Back to the Future, I believe, with his co-host George. Welcome, Connor.
Hello. Hello all.
Yo, where's it going, eh?
George couldn't be here because sadly somebody broke his thumb for not being able to make a payment, so he'll be back soon, I'm sure. He was on the
Guys don't want money. I've lost the accent. You know, I'll fix this.
Yeah, you got sick of George asking to reduce you to Gaza. And we are joined by another guest. You will have heard her actually on Cinema Classics. It was probably the last time she was here. Please welcome back Sandra Evanson. Welcome, Sandy.
You're a bum. You're all bums.
I'm not a bum. Don't call me.
Hi. Yeah, the last time you were here was 2001 A Space Odyssey with Ken, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a while back.
It was. But it was to us, but Cinema Classics-wise, it's probably only about two or three episodes because I only do one on one. So now, if you've ever wanted to know what it feels like to run up the steps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art with Dinner Fly now blasting in the background, then you're in the right place. Because today we're going 12 rounds with the Italian Stallion himself, diving into the heart and soul of a film that made us all believe in the underdog. So grab your gloves, put on your best sweatband, and maybe keep a raw egg or two nearby for that authentic trading vibe. Just don't blame us if you actually drink them. We're about to step into the ring with Rocky, so let's get ready to rumble. I couldn't resist that. Yeah. What we're going to do then, if you are new to us, there will be a review coming, but I will link it in the description as to when we get to it, because beforehand I like to do a little bit of sort of getting to know you with the guests, a little bit of introduction. But Sandy, you have already provided us with your favorite cinema classics when you were on last on 2001, and DK, obviously we know yours, so yeah. Connor, you're a first time guest on Cinema Classics, so Cinema Classics is basically this kind of spin-off where I look at any film released basically between the birth of cinema and 1979. Classic, the more classic the better, but with that in mind, do you have any particular film, cinema classic film, that you would call your favourite, or is it Rocky?
No, I'm thinking of something that I haven't covered, or, like, again, ones that I've seen, but when I think classic, Whether it hits the peak of true classic cinema is subjective, but I always go to Donnie Darko. A bit more on the recent side of things, but for me, Donnie Darko is what I perceive to be a classic.
I said 1979. That was like 1990.
It's the cut-off, damn it. All right, 379. You know what, Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane? Oh, yeah, that's the 40s. Great movie. Okay.
That's the last.
You've surprised me there. I'm surprised you've even seen Citizen Kane, to be honest.
Well, what's that supposed to mean? He's not surprised.
A bum. He's not a bum, Mike.
I didn't mean it like that. I mean, very few of our generation have really seen it, and if they have, they tend not to like it, like DK, who prefers Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I'd rather watch Ghostbusters.
But yeah, that's fair enough. That's a bit classy. I guess that fits the theme. You're not a meathead, not a thug. So, yeah, awesome. Well, that deals with that. So basically what I want to do now is go around and, as we always do, ask everybody what their first experience of this particular film was, and if you can remember it, and what your initial impressions were, either coming out the cinema or whenever it was you watched it, I don't know, turning off the videotape, what have you. So, Sandy, I'm going to come to you first, if you don't mind, and ask what your experience was of this.
I believe my first experience of this was just... seeing my dad watch it, and I was just not interested at all. I was born when it came out. So, you know, I just remember it. I remember it being a favorite of his, though, and my mother loves Sylvester Stallone. So it was on a lot. I do remember that. But it wasn't until much, much, much later that I started appreciating it.
Okay, fair enough. So your parents were kind of watching it, and you weren't involved in their love, and then it kind of grew on you, maybe. So, fair enough. I can understand that. What about you, Connor?
There isn't a particular time frame. It definitely was not the cinema, unfortunately. Yeah. I remember sort of recording it, I want to say, like, early pre-teens, like, I want to say 11, 12, in the living room with my family. It wasn't any particular reason. It was just kind of like, let's just sit down. This is on. It was just been on plenty of times. And it was just one of those where I watched it, appreciated it then. I've gone and watched it a couple more times in my life, and especially like for this. And each time I've gone back to it, I appreciated it with more fondness. So there's no particular fancy story. It was just one of those occasions where we all sat down, watched it together in the living room, and it sort of made everything sense. And I guess that jump that we led into it, like, this isn't like the film that launched or made boxing as mainstream as it was, but obviously without this, boxing wouldn't be on my radar as much because of this, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the common misconceptions about it is that it is a boxing film, because particularly the first one, I think there's comparatively little boxing actually involved, really. There's a lot more to it. I mean, it is still a sports film, and it is still about that ultimately, but... Yeah, it gets a lot more boxing related, I think, as the series goes on. But, no, I mean, discovering films that way is the best, you know, if you discover it, you know, watching with your parents one time or just on a random night or something, there's some of the coolest explorations of films. So, cool. DK, what about you? I haven't asked you yet. When did you first come across Rocky?
I watched it on TV with my parents at a young age. This one and Rocky 2. They were kind of on every so often, to the point where I actually sometimes confuse what scenes are in what movie.
I do that as well.
Yeah.
I was waiting for the chicken chasing scene when I rewatched Rocky, and I was like,
it's pretty confusing. So just that, really. I always had kind of a fondness for it. Watched them as they were released on, you know, VHS. I don't think... I did see one at the cinema, and that was 5. I kind of got into it in the early 2000s. Rocky, got the game on GameCube. I actually started up boxing because of it. Didn't last long. Always kind of been a fan.
Awesome. My story is very similar. It's one of those rare kind of film franchises that both my parents like. So it was kind of one of the... Like, since my birth, it was one of the video sets that we always had around, the Rocky sets. Obviously, you know, probably I say since my birth, it was probably a while later because it was like the set of 1 to 4 or 1 to 5, so it was after that it came out. But they were always around, so we honed them on video, and then obviously you know, the DVD sets came out and we started buying them then. And I've got loads of fond memories of me and my cousin Stuart just watching through them, like back to back, watching through all of the first five and then just kind of chatting through the quote unquote boring parts and then getting really hyped up during the actual fights and stuff. And watching them that way during a big kind of sleepover is certainly one way to digest these movies. And it's fun, I'll tell you that. But yeah, so I've got loads of like memories attached to these and I've owned it on DVD. I've now got 1-4 on 4K with Rocky Balboa on the way. And I did see everyone since Rocky Balboa at the cinema. So that, the three Creed films, and even the Rocky IV Director's Cut that came out a couple of years ago. So I love these films. They're very personal to the family and to me. And yeah, I think it's been a long time since I've seen the first one specifically. And like you, I think the first and second, there's slight melding together in my brain of those two. Because the rewatchability factor, I think, is really more Rocky 3 and 4. And I've seen them so many times because, again, probably like you, if they're on TV, they're only 90 minutes long and they just hook you in. So if I'm flicking through the channels and Rocky 3 or 4's on, I'm watching it for the rest of the time then. But, yeah, anyway. So that'll move us on from that little introductory section then into the behind the scenes, which is how we always start. If you're new to the podcast or you just want to know how we do things, we always break down our reviews of the movie into sections. So we start with a little BTS and then we go into you know, things like acting and writing, plot, direction, VFX, special effects, production design, music, etc. But it's only a rough way to keep our notes together, and if the conversation flows a different way, we will just follow the conversation that way, like Rocky chasing a loose chicken, except that's in the wrong movie. That's the second one, apparently. So so starting with a little bit of behind-the-scenes info, I've split it between myself and DK so that you're not just hearing one of us droning on, probably me, the entire time. And DK, I believe I've got you the first half to kick us off with this.
You have, yep. Rocky entered development in March of 1975 after Stallone wrote the screenplay in 3 days. It entered a complicated production process after Stallone refused to allow the film to be made without him in the lead role. United Artists eventually agreed to cast Stallone after he rejected a six-figure deal for the film rights. Principal photography began in January 1976, with filming primarily held in Philadelphia. Several locations featured in the film, such as the Rocky Steps, are now considered cultural landmarks. With an estimated production budget of under $1 million, Rocky popularized the rags-to-riches and American dream themes of sports dramas which preceded and followed the film. Henry Winkler, Stallone's co-star in the Lords of Flatbush, who then broke out as Arthur Fonzarelli on ABC's Happy Days, and a genuinely nice bloke, said he had taken the script to executives at the network. They expressed interest in turning it into a made-for-television movie and actually bought the script, but insisted that someone else rewrite it. Upon hearing the news, Stallone begged Winkler not to let ABC change writers, so Winkler went back to the executives and offered to return the money in exchange for the rights. While ABC refused at first, Winkler said he was able to use his status as one of its biggest stars at the time to convince them to sell the rights back.
Rumour has it that he just whacked a wall and a jukebox started playing music and they all just fell to their knees. And
I can believe that. Philadelphia-based boxer Joe Frazier has a cameo appearance in the film. Outspoken boxer Muhammad Ali, who fought Frazier 3 times, influenced the character of Apollo Creed. During the 49th Academy Awards ceremony in 77, Ali and Stallone staged a brief comic confrontation to show the film did not offend Ali. Frazier has claimed that some of the plot's most memorable moments, such as Rocky's carcass punching scenes and Rocky running up the steps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art as part of his training regimen, are taken without credit from his own real life exploits.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah, because of the film's comparatively low budget, members of Stallone's family play minor roles in the film. His father rings the bell to signal the start and end of a round. His brother Frank plays a street corner singer. And his first wife Sasha was the stills photographer. Other cameos include former Philadelphia and then Los Angeles television sportscaster Stu Nahan playing himself, alongside radio and TV broadcaster Bill Baldwin, and you'll appreciate this, DK, Lloyd Kaufman, founder of the independent film company Troma, who appears as a drunk in the film.
Nice, I didn't know that.
Yeah, did you spot him? Because I never do. I keep forgetting.
No, I didn't.
No. Diana Lewis, then a news anchor in Los Angeles and later in Detroit, has a minor scene as a TV news reporter. Tony Burton appears as Apollo Creed's trainer, Tony Duke Evers, a role he would reprise throughout the entire Rocky series, though the character is not named until Rocky 2. And in a fantastic clash of our particular passions, Michael Dorn, who would later gain fame as the Klingon Worf in Star Trek, The Next Generation and DS9, etc., made his acting debut, albeit uncredited, as Creed's bodyguard. And once again, didn't spot him at all, but he's there apparently. So yeah, certain elements of the story were altered during filming. The original script had a darker tone, Mickey was portrayed as racist, and the script ended with Rocky throwing the fight after realizing he didn't want to be part of the professional boxing world after all. The first date between Rocky and Adrian, in which Rocky bribes a janitor to allow them to skate after closing hours on a deserted ice rink, was shot that way due to budget concerns. The scene was originally scheduled to be shot in a public skating rink during regular business hours, but the producers decided they couldn't afford the hundreds of extras that would have been required to be paid. The poster scene above the ring before Rocky fights Apollo Creed shows Rocky wearing red shorts with a white stripe when he actually wears white shorts with a red stripe. When Rocky points this out, he's told, "It doesn't really matter, does it?" According to the director, Avildsen, on the DVD commentary, this was an actual mistake made by the props department that they couldn't afford to rectify, so Stallone wrote the brief scene to ensure that the audience didn't see it as a goof. Conversely, Stallone had said he was indeed supposed to wear red shorts with a white stripe as Rocky, but changed to the opposite colours at the last moment. Similarly, when Rocky's robe arrived far too baggy on the day it was needed for filming, Stallone wrote in dialogue where Rocky points this out. So, necessity the mother of invention, I guess. And yeah, that's all I've got for the behind-the-scenes stuff. Anything of interest or surprising there from you guys?
No, I need the thing about...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The shorts, but I didn't know about Michael Dorn.
Or Laurie Kaufman, for that matter.
No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, cool. What about you guys, Sandy, Connor, anything exciting stand out there?
I just think it's exciting. I mean, I did read up a little bit before for the podcast, I at that time I was surprised to learn that the ending was changed, and I'm glad for one. That's much better.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was always fascinated to learn how much Stallone like invested in this movie when I first heard about it, because being a huge fan, I've obviously looked it up since, and then, you know, was quite pleased to hear it won the Academy Award for Best Picture. But then to hear that Stallone's kind of his life mirrored the kind of rags to riches thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
He was only going to make it if he could star in it, and he wasn't known at the time, and it became his big break. And that's how, you know, he is a writer, director, actor now of some repute, you know. So,
and that there was a little bit of luck involved, because when he was pointed out, I believe it was Winkler or one of his associates pointed him out in the picture. And said that's Sylvester Stallone, but it was actually somebody else. And so they decided to make the movie based on who was pointed out in the picture. And then when he saw Stallone, he almost didn't want to make the film. He almost changed his mind. So yeah, it really does parallel just the sheer amount of luck that went into it.
Yeah, luck and hard work, I think, as well. Though, to be fair to Stallone, it's not like he had
very hard work. Yes, yeah, it's deserved.
He definitely was shopping it around, and he wrote the whole thing as well, which is always amazing to me. I mean, he directs most of the films in the franchise, if we're honest, I think more than anybody else. But to even to have just written this whole thing is, as a kid, I was like amazed by that, because I just thought of Stallone as the action movie guy. It'd be like learning that Arnold Schwarzenegger had written like a novella or something.
I still think that. When I look at Stallone these days and I look back to this, it still amazes me that they're one and the same.
Yeah, it's true.
Because it's not a simple script. It's,
no, not at all.
Very deep and complicated.
Yeah. And there's a lot of cinematic kind of tropes and things that he uses within the writing, which I'll get to. But obviously there's direction as well, which you can't downplay John G. Avildsen's, you know, impact on the direction of the thing. But the story itself is not, like you said, a very simplistic thing. And it's amazing how heartfelt some of these things and some of these scenes get.
So, and I wonder how much Stallone himself was directed, because this was his own concept.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like I said, I would imagine he didn't direct the movie, so I would imagine he would have, you know, he strikes me as the type that would defer to a better director if there was notes to be given. But like you say, given that he wrote it, he's going to have a personal attachment to the script. So you've got to wonder how much he actually needed direction, as opposed to just like, you know, I've rehearsed this like 20 times, you know, in my head or out loud when I wrote it. So I think I know what I'm doing, kind of thing. Who knows?
Prior to Stallone sort of kicking off, basically, you know, make the movie without me, damn it, my movie, I wrote it and everything. Were the studio considering any other names? Because he just, I'm thinking the what if timeline we never got, where instead of Sylvester Stallone, he could have been insert name here. And
I don't think it ever got to that point, because it was a question of they like the story, but Stallone was adamant from the very start that, like, I'm not selling you this. The only way you're ever going to make it is if you cast me in the lead role. So they kind of didn't have a choice. So I don't think it was a question of, oh, we like your script and we're thinking of casting, I don't know, Robert Redford or somebody. And it was like, we hadn't even had a chance because you're not getting your hands on it without Stallone attached. So, which again is luck within itself, because you do that nowadays, most people will just be like, well, we're not making it then. Bye. So, yeah. Anyway, I was saying that, I mean, if it was good, it's good. And it won an Oscar, so it's got to be something pretty decent. So, yeah, as I said, moving on to the writing and the plot, I've already mentioned it was written by Stallone. Is there anything else that stands out about the writing and the plot specifically to each of you guys? Let's see. DK, I'm going to ask you first, because you've been quiet.
No, I just think it's a really well-done script. I can't fault it. Yeah, it's slow sometimes. Yeah, it's a little ponderous, but I just think it just swims in atmosphere. I love it.
Cool. And do you have any highlights of the writing, like a particular scene or anything that stands out, or scenes or moments?
I'm not going to get to my favourite scene yet, because
no.
That's jumping the gun. I do like the whole, you know, trying to call Adrian and that hella dysfunctional family that she's part of. It's nobody in this is, you know, 100% clean as a protagonist, with the exception of maybe Adrian. You know, Rocky's, you know, a debt collector, and Paulie's just he's Paulie.
Rocky has his moments of iffiness in the movie as well, to be fair.
Oh, God,
even outside of the debt collector thing, there's a very uncomfortable scene with, like, Adrian wanting to leave and him just blocking the door.
Yeah,
like,
that's...
do not think would fly in 2024.
Yeah,
telling that 12-year-old girl that she looks like a whore. I mean, his heart was in the right place, but...
He didn't say she looks like a whore. He said that if you start talking like that, then people
her
will start referring to you
makes her look
in
like
that way. In the reputation procedure, it's not about what you do. It's, you
just know. Hold off a minute, and I'll hook up with you in a few films.
A few? I mean, five.
I think it's just a very good script, and I love Mickey. I love Burgess Meredith. I mean, I know I'm jumping ahead to the acting, but they give him. Give him some good lines. There's some good interplay between him and Stallone as a character.
I kind of hate Mickey in this one. It's so much different.
He gets to
be so much nicer in the other films, but in this one, it's just like, he's such a dick.
Wake up, you son of a bitch. Yeah,
you just love Mickey from Rocky V. You know it.
I mean, I love him anyway, and it gets there in this film when he actually reveals what his chip on his shoulder is. But it's one of those kind of... It's a film trope that pisses me off no end, where it's just like, you could solve all of this by just literally saying what you feel outright. So, you know, he's doing
all
this.
He's a guy, and guys don't do that, especially in the gym.
I get it, but it's like the passive-aggressive, oh, I've given you a locker up because somebody else better needs it, and you're a crap fighter, and you're fighting two with bums and all that. And then as soon as Rocky gets the big title fight against Apollo, he's like straight at his door like, hey, how's it going? My favorite guy, I'm going to manage you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bit opportunist of you, isn't it, Mickey? You know?
Wow, Michael, you do a good Burgess Meredith.
Get up, Batman. That probably is years of watching Batman, the 66 TV series.
Say, move your little chicken asses. Say that.
Move your little chicken asses. If you cannot break the rope, you'll stay steady and you'll beat him.
I imagine your face looking like Popeye right now.
You're a bum. It's a waste of life.
Anyway, so... Oh, I got carried away when that's an impression I can vaguely do until it's running to the ground. But no, I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying, and that is part of the writing. Like, every character, it sounds churlish to say, but every character goes through some growth. Like, nobody's really the same at the end of the movie that they were at the start. And that is, applies to Mickey, which is why I bring it up, obviously, because, you know, he learned what his issue is with Rocky, and he kind of comes to terms with it, and Rocky does as well. And there's understanding there by the end, at the very least. But it's kind of like, again, because we bleed the first two films together so much in our heads, I remembered more of Mickey than there is in this one. And there really isn't enough for me of him training Rocky once you see that relationship established. And I know we get that anyway later in the later movies, but I would prefer a little bit more of that in this one if I'm being hypercritical. But, you know, it's not, that's not the story that's being told. It is focused, I think, predominantly on Rocky and Adrian and getting their lives together. It's more that love story than anything else. And I can appreciate that kind of laser focus, I guess, as well. It's a wonder they gave the supporting cast anything to do, which is a rarity in that kind of film from this era, but they did. So, yeah. Anyway, enough rambling from me. What about you, Sandy? Did you have anything that stood out in the acting, or sorry, the writing or the plot of the film?
I you know, agree with DK, and just to say that, you know, that there were flawed characters, and that was a choice. But I think he was trying to write a film for, you know, people like him or who grew up like him, and just trying to be more truthful instead of Hollywood, which is really cool. And I really appreciated how he did let Adrian bloom in this also, and that he never did denigrate her as a character. I just really appreciated that in the writing, but also just the subtleties, the small things, which is something that made me actually love the film that I didn't pick up on when I was younger. Just like the banter and the things that he was saying and how he was saying them. They're funny now, whereas before they were just boring lines. But now that I see how it was building his character, you know, like inventing jokes ain't so easy, and some of the other banter, like buddy's in a bad mood, it's his prostate, you know, just like very quick one-liners that would come out and I just never appreciated before. And these are things that are, like you said, for that time in film, wasn't as common.
Yeah,
and
completely.
He did it.
Yeah, and to that point, I think there's one of the favorite things about the writing, and I suppose the acting, is just the charm that is that Stallone imbues Rocky with.
Yes,
like, you know, it's he knows that Adrian's shy, and he's never annoyed at her, and he never sort of treats her badly. And when he, you know, when the other guy starts calling her like mental health slurs, he's having absolutely none of it, and he's gonna kick the crap out of the guy because he's like, you know, it's not on being that way, and he's always like charming to her because even though she's shy, he's very extroverted. So it's little things that like sort of ring true to life, like when he's trying to talk to her in the shop and she's like, you know, head down, and they're looking at each other through the birdcage in that well-directed scene, and he's just yapping away, and then like, oh, I lost the fight, I did this and that, and she's kind of uninterested a bit, but maybe just a bit shy, and then he's like, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, I'm going to come back, I'm going to make another joke up, I'm going to tell you another joke tomorrow, it'll be great. And it's kind of little banter like that that just strikes you as true to life, but you would probably cut from a film script if you didn't want to bring that reality to it. It's just like, well, that's not.
And
but it
he
is
was never,
it kind of builds up, you know.
Even though he was like that, he was never full of himself. In fact, quite the opposite. Yep. They were similar in that way. But it was, as you mentioned, you know, she was more introverted. He was a little bit more extroverted in it. It's like he was trying to say with Rocky's limited vocabulary that they fill in the gaps. Basically, opposites attract. And
yeah, he literally
like
does say that. Yeah, she fills holes. Yeah, completely. Yeah, I love that. And there's one scene in particular that stands out to me that I really love in terms of like the way that he treats Adrian and kind of letting her come to her own choices in her own time, when he kind of invites her in and she's like, I've got to go. And like, instead of being forceful or aggressive or anything, he's just like, yo, come in, and just opens the door and leaves it. And it's like, it's her choice at that point. I'll wait for as long as it takes her to come to it. And it's kind of like, I really appreciated that on a level of oh, you know, it's kind of a sweetness. There would be nothing stopping her going home. But he was like, if she's going to decide to do it, it has to be her choice. And she has to be brave enough to go for it. And it's a little subtle thing, but I was just like, oh, yeah, I appreciate that as well. Anyway, yeah. Connor, what about you? Anything stand out in the writing and the plot?
No, I'm not trying to jump ahead to scenes or anything in particular, but you guys have sort of on things that, you know, I didn't appreciate, like Sandy was saying, there was things that I didn't really notice until this, on this rewatch, like the whole their dynamic with their relationship, the way Sylvester is chatting to her in the shop and she's being sort of nonchalant, unresponsive at the beginning. Yeah, it's down to shyness and, yeah, slurs and things are referenced throughout the film that sort of gives you an uncomfortable sort of feel. But again, it doesn't shy upon the realism that is in the writing and the script. Like, these are all things that I'm not saying everybody is like, but the amount of situations where even if you're sort of romantically interested in someone or not, like the amount of, you know, someone's trying to make an effort with somebody, and yeah, it takes, you know, these things take time and development, and you know, you're putting yourself out there and being vulnerable and opening up, and the other person taking the time to appreciate that you're being genuine and all that. But that is stuff that, you know, rings true to life in whatever dynamic, you know, whoever your person you're interacting with. It's just, yeah, everything you touched upon about he could have been a forceful, intimidating boxer. If this was done today, or if it was more of a modern film, it would have focused on more of the abusive side. You know, oh, Rocky, the books, you will come in. Like, he could have easily gone in like a darker direction, but the fact that, again, it's all from Stallone. He is like a big Italian, limited vocabulary gentleman at this point. It's just, well, you know. I say in this one, Rocky won. I think he's got more material vocabulary as it goes on.
I think one of the things about the character is that there's actually more depth to him there. I think he's more intelligent than people realize, and there's kind of, it's not as evident in this one as you kind of get it as you progress through the movies, but I mean, it is there. The little scenes of him like putting on his glasses and writing in his notebook, even though it's for like the scummy debt collector guy, it's kind of. He genuinely does seem to care, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, you were saying, Connor?
No, literally, like, I'm sort of got it in the background. I'm re-watching a couple of things now. But, he's smooth. He's just smooth. He's a big, friendly, not tall giant in this.
Absolutely. And to your point, I mean, yeah, you're right. It could absolutely have went darker. In a modern film, it might have been like, you know, the perils of dating a boxer and he's abusive and whatever else. But equally, it could have also been like super cheesy rom-com, and it could have been a matter of, you know, he meets Adrian and she immediately falls head over heels for him. And, you know, it's on first meeting, she's immediately changed her life forever. But the fact that it's that gradual, they know each other.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And it's an actual kind of courtship, and it progresses slowly because it would, you know, because of the nature of who they both are. I think it really lends to both of them as characters a believability, and it makes you more affectionate for them because it's not just, you know, boy meets girl, girl falls immediately in love kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, hyper-realism. Yeah, exactly, hyper-realism. It's just nice. Like you say, by the time you get to those points in the script, in the plot, you feel for it more. It's amplified and, you know, it's sweet. It's nice.
Yeah, completely. So, yeah, I mean, suffice to say, there's loads of iconic lines in the movie, which are part of the kind of the writing, the dialogue, etc. So one of the things that I wanted to shout out, and I'll probably go around and just ask if there's anything that stands out to you guys particularly. One of the things that I think sums up the characters really well, and I've never really noticed before, it's only one line, but it's basically after Paulie has like thrown the turkey into the street, and then sort of she's forced, I guess, in a way, but then decides to go out with Rocky. and they're leaving, and she's obviously all sad about it, and looking at the, you know, the bird on the snow. And Rocky's like, well, I wasn't bothered anyway. It's all right. It's only turkeys. And she just says, well, it was Thanksgiving. And his response of just, yeah, to you, but to me, it's Thursday. I think says so much about those two characters in one line. And I'm just like, oh, dang, that's weirdly heartbreaking in a way, you know? Because this guy obviously hasn't got any family to hang out with and or friends or anything like that. And, you know, doesn't have anything special going on. He's just doing his best to live his best life and progress and win every fight he can, I guess, in many ways.
Yeah, I like how the dialogue does kind of show him as someone, like you mentioned, it's not that he's not smart or intelligent. It's more just like he doesn't have the exposure or education, more like when he says, are you close to the general public or are you close to everybody? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Adrian's brother says, I want you out of here instamatically.
Yeah.
Same scene.
Hey, Paul, you wait a few films, I'll buy you a robot. Don't worry about it.
And he's just showing like a very, maybe slightly under blue collar style of living in Philadelphia, you know, that time.
I'll get to that when we hit the production design and stuff, because that apartment is filthy.
And the streets too starkly contrast to where Adrian and her brother live and where he's running downtown, but the neighborhood he's walking through. Yeah,
I think there's a weird kind of beauty to the streets though, even though it is kind of run down, because I don't know, there's something homely about it, and I don't think the director ever films it in a way of like pitying.
No.
In some ways, it's more like, you know, the resilience and the strength of these people and the coming together of the neighborhood, etc. And there are scenes like the running up the steps, not to jump too far ahead, where he runs up the steps at dawn, where it looks just absolutely gorgeous. One of the best shots, I think, in film that I've seen, you know, not just because of the way, iconic Rocky hands in the air thing, but the way that the sunlight kind of hits Philadelphia at that moment is just like, oh, I don't know. I assume that was shot then and they just hit magic hour and, it, you know, got gold, because you wouldn't have been CGIing stuff like that in 76. But
well, yeah, the shot where he's going up and doesn't make it was shot the same day as the second time. So
I can believe it,
because
it's very, so yeah, fair enough. So one thing I did want to ask around is, how do you guys respond to, and I'll open it up to anybody who wants to jump in, how do you respond to this idea of, you know, the whole film basically hinges on nobody wants to fight Apollo Creed, so he decides, you know, oh, let's just give a complete random local underdog a chance at the world championship of the world. There's no reality to it, by the way. I've looked into this, and yes, a lot of boxing fans will point out this is absolutely impossible. Could never happen, would never happen. It's an absolute dream. There are rules preventing it, etc. But does that bother you guys at all, or do you just go with it?
I just go with it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I
let it go. I'm on with everyone to let it go. I mean, it absolutely would not. It would not happen in the slightest. But it is what it is.
Yeah, fair enough. I think I'd have more of a problem with it if it was like Rocky 1, basically. But yeah, the fact that he doesn't anyway, so it doesn't. I mean, it ultimately doesn't matter. And like you said, you've got to accept it is a rags to riches tale. You've got to have a way in for this, and okay, it might not be strictly believable, but it's a movie at the end of the day. You know, it's not a documentary about boxing, so I forgive it, I think, on that level. Not that I've ever really particularly noticed or cared until, you know, doing some research into it, that you know you can't do it, you've got to have so many fights under your belt and be ranked at a certain point or whatever, and there's all this nitty-gritty that's just really boring, you know, that prevents the dream from happening. But anyway, what about you, Sandy? Did you get bothered by that at all, or?
Not at all. I wouldn't even have known that it should be a problem. Ignorance is bliss, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I just kind of, it went in one ear and out the other, because I was like, I'm not expecting realism from these movies. You know, at the start of the third one, he has a combined boxing wrestling fight with Hulk Hogan. So, you know, who are we to expect realism? I kind of look on this fight like that as well, because there's a moment, again, a brilliant line when, you know, Creed's actually being fought, you know, to the limit. And I think it's somebody in his corner says, this guy, nobody told him this is a show. He thinks it's an actual fight. Yeah, you get him. You've kind of mentioned it already, you guys, but what do you think about the scenes of like Rocky with the neighborhood kids, particularly with Marie and the kind of like, who are you to give advice, meatball kind of side of things? Does any of that kind of stand out in any way, or negatively or positively or anything?
I like it simply because it just shows that, you know, deep down he is a guy that's just trying to do the right thing. And even though he sees himself as a bum, he doesn't necessarily want that future for these kids growing up in the area.
Yeah. And I mean, it's related to that, even though it might not seem like it. I really love the idea that he's like, he's doing his job, chasing down the kind of guy that owes money and everything, but he doesn't break the guy's thumb and, you know, gets, he has to explain himself to the loan shark guy. Like, well, you know, if his thumb's broken, he's getting laid off, he can't make the money. But you just get the sense he's not really that much of a hard case, and that's maybe even part of the reason he doesn't want to kind of put Paulie forward, is because he knows that he wouldn't have that restraint.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, you don't want to be, you don't want to end up, you know, batting somebody to death or whatever. Who knows what you would do? But
he's just a guy in dire circumstances, just trying to do his best.
But he's still intimidating, and intimidating enough to make that, I guess the loan shark's name with his muscles is enough to make that guy literally tremble in his boots.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we don't know how, you know, the film's quite sanitized in that way. We don't know what he's done beforehand or what, you know, what else that job involves. But when Mickey screams, you know, it's a waste of your life, effectively, you know, you kind of feel that anyway. So I don't think you need to get into that. But I don't, you know, I don't think he'd be going around breaking legs or anything, but still.
Would you be opposed to, would any of you be opposed if they ever were to do like a Rocky prequel series of Rocky the Lone Shark? Stay away from Rocky the Boxer. If we were to get like a random Rocky the Lone Shark man,
as like, long as the CGI is good.
Or do you like what we have already?
I don't think so. I think it's the heart of the films is really more about the boxing journey and stuff, which would still be part of it, but it's like that's the life we wanted to get away from, so I don't want to see us dwell in that for 2 hours. You know what
Watch out, Disney will make an animated version of it if you're not careful.
Well, supposedly there is a Rocky 7 currently in development, so it's happening at some point. Yeah, I mean, we've kind of talked about, I think, most of that, unless anything particularly stands out to you guys in terms of the actual plotting and the way that it works. Like I said, we'll talk about it probably a bit more in the acting, but I love the scenes where you get Mickey and Rocky yelling or Paulie breaking down or Adrian finally standing up for herself. These are all great things, but it's more of an acting. I mean, obviously they're written, so it's silly to say, but it's more the acting that elevates them.
It's so understated, though, because they are playing shy, socially inept characters. It's really hard to tell. I mean, I think in retrospect, I think they were good actors, but prior, I thought they were just really these people.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like the realism is the point on a lot of it, and so you know you don't feel like you're watching a performance, but at the same time, I think that makes the
what I'm trying to say.
Big epic dramatic scenes, it makes them all the more impactful because they're finally, I don't know, opening up, or they're finally letting their feelings out. So like I said, when Rocky's raging at Mickey, even though he's already left, or when Paulie like really kicks off and tries to throw them out of the house, and then Adrian stands up and she's like, oh, what do I owe you? I do everything for you, blah, 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 and finally stands up for herself. You know, or even Mickey when Rocky's asks him, what's your problem? And he says, like I said, oh, you could have been special, but you're working for a two-bit loan shark. It's a waste of life, etc. These things stand out as really key moments because, like you said, it's characters that are very repressed, finally acknowledging their emotions, I guess. Would you say the same?
Yes.
Sorry. I kind of stole your thunder and said exactly what you were saying, I think, basically. That.
No, I couldn't phrase it that well. I'm so glad you did.
That's fair enough. Well, the last thing I kind of want to mention then in the writing is I've always kind of loved that the film doesn't do the kind of fairy tale, everything's fantastic and we win ultimately in all ways at the end. I've always loved that it ends with, like, he loses the fight. Fair enough, it's on a split decision. But it's not about that. It's about that fantastic scene when he says, like, I just want to go the distance. And when he does, it's like he's won, you know, everything he could ever want to win. And it's more about him, you know, connecting with Adrian as well, and the kind of the film ending on their I love you, as opposed to anything, you know, any importance being given to the background sort of, oh, Apollo Creed's won, that's what's actually happened in the fight. And he's even, you know, being asked, like, is there going to be a rematch? And he's like, get away, I don't want to talk about that right now. And so the focus is straight back to him and Adrian, and like, I was able to do it and be proud of myself. I've always kind of loved that ending, and it's probably my, you know, one of the highlights of the film for me. And I'm not going to say I dislike two for undoing it, because I don't. I think it was, you know, it was inevitable when this film did well, and I love that on its other level. And for what we got in, like, kind of, you know, the ultimate deciding match that we don't see in Rocky III.
Ding, ding.
Ring the bell, Apollo. Exactly. So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that, I think that was a brave choice to just end with, like, it's not important who won, you know.
But where he did kind of win is when the announcer said this was the greatest exhibition of boxing stamina in the history of the ring.
Well, and yeah, that's, and like I said,
was how he won. That's what he wanted. That was his goal.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. I think that's why it's nice that you have that scene with Adrian on the bed where he finally confesses, like, all I want to do is go the distance. Nobody's ever done that. And if I do that, it'll prove that I'm not just some bum from the neighborhood. And he does that. And it's like, you know, that is the goal. So you're not left like, oh, he didn't win. You're left like, yay. Which is kind of weird because, like I said, we think of this as the kind of quintessential rags to riches, you know, against all odds winning kind of story. And he doesn't actually win at the end of it.
He wins a personal victory for him.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the point.
Yeah. And I do
and it
like
feels
that it's
so good.
No, go on.
Yeah.
I was just going to say it feels so good every time you watch it. It feels so good. All
oh,
over
God,
again.
Yeah. It makes me kind of well up that final scene. And I do like that, you know, had this not gone to countless sequels, I do like the fact that they don't dwell on the aftermath of the fight. They just, you know, while him and Apollo are just completely, completely exhausted at the end of the fight, they're both just saying there ain't going to be no rematch. It kind of does away with the what's going to happen next kind of thing. And it would have been a nice full stop.
Yeah. That's the kind of the one thing that jars is all of the talk of, like, ain't gonna be no rematch, don't want one, etc., which in retrospect is kind of silly now, but like you said, if this had been the only movie, it would stand on its own really well there, and that I think that sentiment works better if you're watching it in isolation, maybe. But yeah, it's great. I like the movie, suffice to say. So moving on then to the acting. Did I give you something to read for this part?
Yeah, I've got something for that. Real-life boxer Ken Norton was initially sought for the role of Apollo Creed, but he pulled out and the role was ultimately given to Carl Weathers. Norton, upon whom Creed was loosely based, fought Muhammad Ali 3 times, according to the Rocky scrapbook. Cary Snodgrass was originally chosen to play Adrian, but a money dispute forced the producers to look elsewhere. Susan Sarandon and Cher auditioned for the part, but Sarandon was deemed too pretty for the character and Cher too expensive. After Talia Shire's ensuing audition, Chartoff and Winkler and director John Avildsen insisted that she play the part.
Yeah, awesome. And I did read somewhere that she was kind of happy to be able to step out of the shadow of the family she's part of, the Ford Coppola family, and kind of stand up for on her own 2 feet. And despite that, this is actually like the second best Oscar winner in a row that she stars in, because it was like The Godfather Part 2 won the year before or the year after Rocky, something like that. So that's got to be pretty impressive that you're in the two best picture winners like 2 years in a row. Yes, this did win Best Picture at the Oscars, by the way. So yeah, fair enough. So obviously we've talked a little bit about it, but I want to kind of throw it open to you guys. What did you think of the acting? Does anybody stand out, or is there a highlight that that appeals to you?
I think Burgess Meredith is a standout. Of course, he had more opportunity to hone his craft than some of the others, but he's just so intense, his intensity.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
which is polar opposite of Rocky, who, I mean, he fights, but he never, I mean, he rarely gets angry, like truly angry. Yeah. He's just like, everything's go with the flow, except that one part when he told Adrian, you know, when I said that stuff on TV didn't bother me, well, it did. And that was like the most he opened up, you know,
no,
in
I
the
think
beginning.
There's a few moments like that, because I would put that the moment, like I said, the key moment when he's on the bed and just says, like, what am I doing? I don't think I can possibly win. And she says, like, oh, you worked so hard. What are you going to do? And he just says, well, I just want to go the distance. That's all I want to do. But he does confess, like, those moments to Adrian and to DK's point. Sorry to interrupt you, Sandy. It's like, it's the stereotypical kind of, you know, repressed bloke type thing where he would never admit his feelings. But when he gets closer to Adrian, he actually does reveal the truth of things, you know. And all the characters do that. Like you said, Mickey does that when Rocky finally confronts him about, like, why you're being such a jerk. Paulie does it in his own, you know, stupid, hyper-aggressive way when his own insecurities are kind of brought to the surface. So I think there is part of that in there. But yeah, definitely to your point, he's repressed to most people for the majority of the film. So yeah, you were saying, sorry.
Just that, you know, that's why I appreciate Burgess, or why he's a standout for me, because he's just intense from beginning to end in the whole film.
Yeah. He's definitely a good presence, and I think probably at the time, the most seasoned kind of veteran actor that was part of it. Yeah, but there's such... I wanted to bring that to light as well, because there's such a moment where it doesn't even make sense, because it shouldn't really hit as hard as it does, but it's his response to when Rocky's actually having a go at him and he's still in the apartment, and just says something like, oh, what about you? You had your chances, blah, blah. What about mine? Not working, blah, blah. And he just turns around and Mickey just goes, I'm 76 years old. And that's all he says. And it's heartbreaking the way Burgess Meredith delivers that line. And I'm like, I get it. I understand what you're saying, even though it's apropos of nothing in a way to the conversation, yet it is relevant to everything of, like, my life's over, dude, you know, but you can still make something of yourself. And I'd like to give you a leg up on that. So, yeah, he's a good actor for sure. And he also gets some of the best lines, like, you're going to eat lightning and you're going to crap thunder. Which I love. Yeah. What about you, Connor? Anything stand out for you in the acting?
I mean, I like Paulie. I like Burt Young. Paulie's a highlight. He's a favourite.
Yeah, you end up you hear him, but you are supposed to. I think is the point. So.
Yeah. No, but I also kind of want more of him, and luckily we get more of him. To come. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you hate him and you pity him at the same time in a weird way.
Exactly,
as well.
Yeah. There is like pity sympathy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paulie's an interesting one. Yeah, I like Paulie.
Yeah, cool. So he'd be your standout. What about you, DK?
It's another vote for Burgess.
fair enough. Yeah, I will say, like, just to touch on everybody, obviously I think Stallone is the key here. You know, like I said, he imbues Rocky with such charm and such likability that I don't think the film would work if anybody else was in the lead, or if anybody else was playing this differently, because it is such a... And it is partly because it jars with his... I don't know if you would say established kind of star or whatever, because it wasn't really in existence, but it jars with, you know, the way he looks and the way he talks is seemingly counter to the way he actually acts and what he says and his kind of deep down intelligence and empathy, I guess, in a lot of ways. So I love that character from the start. Yeah.
In fact, yeah, one of the earlier demonstrations of that is when, you know, right before he offers to walk Adrian home from work and she's like, no, thank you. But he kind of, in a way, walks her home, because as he leaves, he like clears the streets of bums. He picks that one guy up and gets him out of the way so she won't be, you know, harassed on her way home. He just takes care of it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's a lot of stuff like that where it's like, it's obvious that he's got affection for Adrian, but he doesn't push because he knows that you don't do that with somebody who's like, you know, chronically shy anyway. So he lets her kind of come to her own bravado whenever it's necessary. And I think that's why he's like kind of reacting so negatively when Paulie drags him over and he's like insisting, she does know I'm coming, doesn't she? She does know. And it turns out she doesn't, and he has to kind of talk to her through the door, and he keeps stopping every couple of sentences and just looking at Paulie with a look like, I'm going to freaking kill you, man.
I feel like a jerk.
Yeah, exactly. Which I love that. yeah. And to that point, like Talia Shire, I think, does a really good job, particularly in the early scenes, at being like the kind of shy, meek okay, it's cliche, the whole like ugly duckling, and all she's actually doing is wearing a hat and some glasses. And, you know, as soon as she, you know, gets the guy, you get the huge makeover situation, and she suddenly changes and she never wears the glasses again. And she's not dowdy and she's wearing fancy clothes. And, you know, even Rocky's like, oh, looking good, breaking hearts, which is a little bit cliche and cheesy for me in this particular movie. It's sort of, it's better, I think, with the others. But at the same time, I get it. Like, that's the story you're telling is about her coming into her power at the same as he is. And his is more about, you know, getting to boxing fitness levels and being able to stand up against, you know, Apollo and whatever. Hers is more just like being able to live your life and open up to the world. So I appreciate the outer sort of version of that.
Yeah, it's, as you mentioned earlier, they're both getting out of the things that are holding them down.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether it be the area and lack of a future or just your brother.
Yeah, well, or just like your own shyness. And it comes down to, again, one of the other lines that I just absolutely adore, which sums the two characters up, is when Rocky was like, well, my mother just said I was never born with so many brains, I better use my body. And Adrian says, well, it's weird, my mother said the opposite, I didn't have much of a body, so I better use my brains. And it's like, both of your parents were jerks, first of all, and secondly, you've got to bust out of that and, you know, realize you're the full package and not keep denigrating yourselves in that way, you know? Fair enough, which I think happens by the sequel, which is why you end up caring so much, you know, when she's in hospital giving birth or whatever, and like you said, you end up with a tear in your eye when she finally comes around and tells him to win the fight. That wouldn't be as impactful, I think, without these moments. So.
No. And I think, genuinely, there is no bad performances in this movie. It's
definitely
not like some of the later movies, which I'm not going to mention, where, yeah, some people are all right and some you just think, oh, why? Just stop.
No, I couldn't point to a bad performance in this. Even, you know, there's moments where you think it might stand out. Other performances, like, for example, Apollo Creed, it doesn't necessarily fit the realism of this world, but he's not supposed to. He's meant to be flashy and extravagant and over the top, and that's the point. To my other, kind of, like, the last thing I had on the writing is, is that, like, I'm sure I've said this already, but, man, what a loss Carl Weathers is as an actor, because that man can do everything, you know what I mean? And I remember, I wish I'd looked it up, but I didn't. There was a quote that Stallone made when he passed not long ago that was just like, the Rocky movies would not work without Carl Weathers. Nobody would have been able to bring that tightrope act of Creed to life, where you kind of hate him, but you love him, but you're charmed and you're entertained, but you also want him to get knocked out. But, you know, it's all of these things and more, and I don't think many actors could have actually pulled that off and still fit into this world without feeling like you are watching a different film at times. But
yeah.
It never feels like that, you know?
And he was a very, very underrated actor. I mean, you know, he did this and he did Predator, which were kind of big movies. And then he you know, he didn't get the recognition he deserved. I just thank goodness that, you know, he got more recognition in his later years in things like Arrested Development and Mandalorian, because he was a really good actor and apparently a really nice guy with it.
So any last thoughts from anybody on the acting in the film, other than like what DK summed up with, I think that's not a bad performance yet. Anything from Connor or Sandy?
Just, I like Talia Shire. Like, again, it's just Talia Shire. I like Adrian's sort of lack of, like, very minimal words, minimal movement, and then by the time you get to the end, you know, she comes out of her shell, she sort of pushes the boundaries, and, you know, it, like we keep saying, it's about both the characters sort of getting past their inner turmoil and fears and growing as people. And of course, two people coming together, they help each other both out. And that's, you know, it's sort of metaphorical, it's sort of a message of life. And, you know, two people become one and they both, you know, they both come together and help each other out.
Yeah. Well, again, it's like Rocky says, isn't it? They fill gaps. I think it's the best way to put it, really, isn't it? So, and the film does. It's in the writing. So, cool. What about you, Sandy? Anything you want to shout out last minute before we move to direction?
I think I said my piece.
Cool. So yeah, the direction of this movie, I've already mentioned, it was by John G. Avildsen, the director of both this film and, inexplicably, Rocky V. the majority of the others, of course, being directed by Stallone. I think he did 2, 3, 4, and 6. And then obviously the Creed movies are a different matter entirely. Different directors each one. But yeah, so this is John G. Avildsen. And yeah, like I said, it's amazing to me that he did this incredible Academy Award winning movie, then came back to make the worst of the series. But goes to show, I guess anything can happen.
The Karate Kid in between.
Oh, I keep forgetting about that. Yeah.
He did all three.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so in terms of the direction, I did want to say as well that I noticed a lot of sort of steady cam shots tracking people in the streets and stuff like that. And I will say inventor Garrett Brown's new steady cam was used to accomplish smooth photography while running alongside Rocky during the film's Philadelphia street training sequence and the run-up to the Art Museum's flight of stairs, now colloquially known as the Rocky Steps. It was also used for some shots in the fight scenes, and you can see it at the ringside during some wide shots of the final fight. Rocky is often erroneously cited as the first film to use the Steadicam, although it was actually the third after Bound for Glory and Marathon Man. So if you're ever on a pub quiz, now you know that little bit of trivia. So yeah, other than that kind of little bit of information, does anything in particular stand out from the direction or any scenes that you made a note of or that you thought stood out? Sandy, I'm going to come to you first, because why not?
I thought that the boxing was really shot well because of just how you were able to see everything, how you were able to follow the boxing. In fact, it was shot and shown so well that you can actually see him missing in that first fight.
Mm. Yeah,
you can see him missing the face. But I appreciated how it was shot and that I, as a non-boxing fan, could follow, you know, really well what was happening in the match. I also thought, and I don't know if this fits in here, but how we got a very good layout of the neighborhood. So it kind of felt like home, how he went from this place to this place, how when you went to the pet store and then walked across the street, you're like, oh, I didn't realize, you know, the boxing club was right across the street from the pet store. But then you kind of just get like the layout of this little corner of his neighborhood. And I just really appreciated that when it came to filming scenes and how they were cut together.
I'm glad you said that, actually, because it's something that I noticed and couldn't quite like verbalize. And you're exactly right. I think it makes all the difference that you actually follow Rocky's journey. It's not a question of he leaves the house, we cut the scene and he arrives at the destination, opens the door to the next place. We actually see him walking out the house, walking through the streets, going to where the places are. And I think that does, to your point, it brings it back to more of a real sense again and makes this feel like more, you know, real people in a real neighborhood and connects you to it in that way.
Like you have a little map of the area in your mind as you're watching.
Exactly, yeah. And like I said, it makes it feel more real, so it's not just a film set. It is the streets of this place, the streets of Philadelphia, not to go up for Springsteen.
The familiarity with how when he does approach his own apartment, how he reaches out and swings around the stairs there like he's done it 100 times before.
Yes,
it's really amazing, all the little subtleties that mattered to them. And I even wonder if it was written into the script, and that's why, besides that character was so important to him, if that's why it was so important for him to be attached to the film, because he had these things in his mind.
Maybe. Yeah, we'd have to interview, obviously, Stallone and the director, and I didn't do enough research.
Okay, let's do that.
The director's commentary. I mean, I'd love to. Believe me, I'd love to. But like I say, one day I will get around to listening to all the... There's like 3 audio commentaries on this first film. And I'm like, I don't have time to listen to 3 audio commentaries. And I don't want it to, you know, colour my opinion or anything that I'm jumping into. It would be kind of sucky if I'm just repeating what they say in the commentary on the podcast. So I don't want to do that anyway. But if you are interested, I think one of them is the director... One is like Stallone and Burt Young, maybe, or something like that. And then one of them's like a boxing commentary type thing. I forget. But yeah, there's several behind the scenes things on the movie. Yeah. What about you, Connor? Anything from the direction stand out?
Yeah, the boxing was cool. But again, you can say about all of these boxing, Rocky films, all the boxing in all the films are cool. Especially like the modern cinematics in Creed. I like the way Creed 3's fights were shot in particular. But again, that's going off topic slightly. It's all solid. I like you say, you keep touching on every other point, but I like how, again, you get a sense of the world building because it isn't just cut, arrive at place, or we don't need to see him walk down a road and da 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 da. Like, you see everything. Like, we keep touching upon, you get a sense of the world building in Rocky's perspective, because you see it all. This film doesn't seem to shy away from anything. It's just impressive that it's done by Stallone himself. Like, this one isn't, sorry, but written by Stallone. Again, I forget the credits that he contributed as well as being the main actor. It's mental, really.
He wrote in, I don't know, he's probably a producer on it or something, but yeah, he wrote it and he's obviously the star. And as you said, as Sandy alluded to, we don't know how much of this he was responsible for kind of I don't know, helping direct or second unit director or whatever, because it's his, you know, it's very rare you get the lead actor who wrote the movie, so he could have potentially brought some stuff to that, you don't know. But
It's a point that both Connor and Sandy brought up, actually. The boxing scenes are directed not only well, but in a way that is accessible to people.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
That, you know, aren't familiar with the sport or, you know, aren't really interested in the sport. When you primarily, this film gets compared with, obviously, Scorsese's Raging Bull. And when you look at the boxing scenes in that, they're freaking brutal. And I don't think that approach would have worked in a tale like this. And I think Avildsen did a really good job of making it accessible. He doesn't glamorise it, but it is a lot less brutal than, say, Raging Bull. And I think he did a good job with that, with those scenes.
Yeah, I like the boxing scenes in this, but on a rewatch again, it was surprising to me how little of the film are actually devoted to that. Like, the actual montage and the fight are the last half hour of a 2-hour movie, and the fight itself is only like the last 15 minutes or so. So there's very little of it, and I think there's a point where it starts. I mean, I appreciate the director doing this, the way that he kind of fades out between the rounds and kind of to show you, like, rather than you're not going to sit through a 12 or 15 or whatever it is fight. No. So it shows you like the things progressing by just fading out and back in. And I'm sure we've all seen versions of this montage where, you know, they'll be fighting and then the card will cross the screen with like round two, which doesn't happen here, but it's basically the same idea, you know. So it's a shortcut, you know.
But I mean, the film is more about the people than the actual sport compared to things like Raging Bull. But I think memory plays a big part, because I remember there being a lot more boxing in it when I did see it as younger.
Having said that, I think necessity being the mother of invention, because that's also, this is, I don't know if it's the first ever example of it, but it could well be the first time you use a montage to kind of show, you know, improvement from one point to another. I'm trying desperately not to just quote the Team America song now. Yeah. But, you know, the first thing that, you know, you start off, you know, smoking, you're a bum, you can't make it up steps. Then you show a montage of your training regimen and the various things and conclude with, like, now you can conquer that obstacle, you know, up them steps. And that's something that's been used to death ever since, because it is just so effective.
It's cliched now, but this was the thing that really kicked off those kind of montage scenes.
Yeah.
And it does it incredibly well. I mean, we're going on about this, there's not a lot of boxing in, but it does it, so it doesn't outstay its welcome. I mean, you have an audience who at that point is kind of hooked. They want to see what goes on, but you don't want to just bore them to death in the last, you know, 30 minutes. Yeah. And I think he made the right call with regards to montaging a lot of these.
Yeah, and I think it keeps you going, because the whole point is that, yes, I would probably agree with you that you could argue there's a little bit of a slower, more deliberate pace, but it, the whole point is it knows what it's working towards, and so it ups the pace when you get there, because it knows this is the kind of key point, and it wants you kind of sucked in, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's when things become like, wow, you know, everything's, because obviously the same is true to the character, like everything's washing over him, and it's all like, wow, I'm here, I'm having a title shot, I'm with my girlfriend, everything's kind of going a bit crazy, so that's maybe how it feels to us as well. Like, random notes about the direction, but I just want to say, like, I mentioned it already, but I love the choice of, like, just to emphasize how awkwardly disconnected Rocky and Adrian are. They're talking to each other through a literal birdcage. It's like literal bars in that one scene at the start. So you get a close-up of Adrian through that, and then when she actually does finally come around to his apartment, just a clean close-up of her face in the mirror, now just free of bars, which I thought, like, I get what you're doing here. I think there's some great atmospheric lighting throughout the movie. I love the choice that Rocky, like I said, you have that whole argument with Mickey, both in the house, and then once Mickey leaves, he's still shouting, you know, out at nobody. But we don't actually see what he says to Mickey that turns him around, and like when he agrees to let him manage him, which I think is a fantastic and correct choice. Like, we see that he chases Mickey down, and we see him at the edge of the street talking to him, but we're not privy to what's said, because it doesn't matter. What was said that was important was in the like rant. So him now being like, okay, you can do it or whatever, wouldn't have been as relevant.
Yeah.
A lovely shift focus scene of Rocky and Adrian before the fight in the locker room. Although it looks like something out of an ABBA video nowadays in comparison, but still. The fact that they use the microphone going up and down to give you an aerial view of the boxing ring is quite genius. And at the sort of the key moment where Rocky has Creed on the ropes, you see it all through cigar smoke to give you the atmosphere. And the director cuts to show you that that's what it is. It's not like, you know, you're not imagining this and it's not just stagecraft. But it also, you know, it achieves that goal of making it look dramatic and like, you know, ooh, this is a key moment. So, yeah, appreciated all of that. Shall I move on to VFX production design, etc.? I'm taking up a bit long, but, you know.
Yeah.
We're talking about a good film, so it's fine. I have a few, well, three notes really about the production design more than the FX, because, you know, visual effects in a Rocky film, there aren't many, especially in the very first one. So one thing that I did find incredible was I read that the end fight versus Apollo Creed was filmed backwards. You know, so this is a great life hack. They filmed it backwards so that they could just gradually remove the damage makeup, like the scars and the wounds and things, instead of adding
that's
to them.
Cool.
Yeah. I was like, that's genius. I say backwards. Obviously, I mean, like, each round was backwards. So you start with the last round and end with the first round, and you're clean at that point. So I was like, I love that. That's quite a clever way of doing things. The second point I would make, I've already mentioned, is just like, how filthy is Rocky's apartment? You really get, maybe because we're used to having seen, you know, down the line, he's got robots and mansions and things, but like, he goes to his apartment and I'm like, there is dirt and damp and everything all over this. He asks Adrian to come and sit down on the couch and there's empty beer bottles just on the top back of the couch.
And he's got like, a hole in his shirt.
It's just, it's so filthy. I can feel the bugs on me right now. I can feel the, like, ants and the nits and, ooh, I want to get out of here. even before he has like two turtles and a bulldog living in there with him somehow. I do like that as well. I forgot about that moment, the moment when he's like, this is two turtles, Cuff and Link. And then she's just like, yeah, I sold them to you.
Also, another poignant line right after when he talks about he had to move the mountain because it kept making them flip over.
Yeah, never noticed that, but that's a good point. Yeah. Sorry, DK, you were saying.
Yeah, he actually owned those after filming, didn't he?
He still does. I was going to say that's a random fact that I heard, that I read, is that as of the last time it was reported, which was a couple of years ago, yes, those turtles are still alive and Stallone still owns them because, you know, turtles live for like 200 years or whatever.
Yeah.
That is mad.
Long.
Yeah. I don't know if that's still true, but certainly was in whenever it was reported. The last thing I have on this, and, you know, get ready to take a drink, I guess. I always like to bring it up if there's a 4K, I think, that makes a difference to the film.
Do you always like to bring it up?
I love it.
If it doesn't improve the quality, I tend not to bring it up because it's kind of embarrassing if it's like, well, it's roughly the same. But I will say this is an improvement dramatically on the DVD, certainly, and on the Blu-ray, and it looks so crisp. And for a 1976 movie, it looks so good in the ultra-high definition format. So if you're thinking of upgrading, consider that my recommendation. Thumbs up. So, yeah. Did you guys have anything you wanted to say about the VFX, the production design, or the look of the film?
The boxing makeup at the end, I think, really well done.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, I wince at the scene when he's asking him to cut his eye.
Yeah, yeah.
It's visceral. Out. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I wouldn't know because I can't watch it past a certain point, so I've never seen anything squirt out because I've usually got my own eye closed. Like, okay, I'll do.
Oh, it's very obviously under pressure.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
But it's great.
You're sick. I love it. obviously, this iconic music is by Bill Conti. I think DK referenced him earlier. The main theme song, Gonna Fly Now, made it to number one on Billboard magazine's Hot 100 list for 1 week, from July 2nd to the 8th, 1977. But the American Film Institute placed it 58 on its list, AFI's 100 Years, 100 Songs. Yeah, I don't really have much to say other than I like that it's introduced as a sad kind of music motif. So you hear it, it's the same song, but you just hear it like doo-doo at first, and then it gradually becomes more and more triumphant as the character does. But I don't like that during Creed's entrance, the music drowns out the dialogue, so I did not hear what the heck the commentators were saying. Other than that, I just have the note that Frank Stallone's song Take You Back is also on the soundtrack, and he sings the song in the movie with the other friends around a trash can fire. Because I know we've probably got some sly Frank Stallone fans out there. So yeah, anything about the music and the sound that you guys want to bring up or reiterate or mention?
I just thought it was interesting in the opening scene where I mentioned you could see him missing his face. There's no punching sounds.
Oh, no, they avoid all that because it wouldn't be realistic. So they don't do the kind of the foley, as they call it, where it's like bang, psh, tsh, tsh, you know, because you wouldn't hear that if you were really there, would you? So, yeah, I think that adds to the realism. Move us to the next section then, which is because this is a cinema classics that I kind of introduced to the podcast. I don't do an audience response because it's generally assumed that it would be mostly positive if it's a classic movie. So instead, I tend to look at the critics and the way they responded to this movie or to all the movies I do on cinema classics, and Rocky was no exception. But just like the behind the scenes, I don't want to just have one voice droning on. So I think I've given you the first half again, DK, to read out.
Rocky became the highest growing movie of 1976, earning approximately $225 million worldwide. It received critical acclaim for Stallone's writing, as well as the film's performances, direction, musical score, cinematography and editing, among other accolades. It received 10 Academy Award nominations and won 3, including Best Picture. It's also been ranked by numerous publications as one of the greatest films of all time, as well as one of the most iconic sports films ever. Rocky and its theme song have become a pop cultural phenomenon, an important part of 1970s American popular culture. In 2006, the Library of Congress selected Rocky for preservation in the United States National Film Registry for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
I feel like that should become our next new drinking game, because we seem to bring that up.
We say this on everything, don't we? Yeah, with its more on your films. With its production budget of just under $1 million, Rocky is notable for its worldwide percentage return of over 11,000%. Yeah. It was the highest grossing film released in 76 in the United States and Canada, and the second highest grossing film of 1977, behind Star Wars.
Which, you know, fair company to be in, I think. Review-wise, Rocky received positive reviews at the time of its release. Roger Ebert of Chicago Sun-Times gave it 4 out of 4 stars and said that Stallone reminded him of the young Marlon Brando. Box Office Magazine claimed audiences would be touting Sylvester Sly Stallone as a new star. Frank Rich liked the film, calling it almost 100% schmaltz, but favouring it over the cynicism that was prevalent in movies of the time, though he referred to the plot as gimmicky and the script heavy-handed. Several reviews, including Richard Eder's, as well as Camby's negative review, compared the work to that of Frank Capra. The film, however, did not escape criticism. Vincent Camby of New York Times called it pure 30s make-believe in modern times. The film enjoys a reputation as a classic and still receives nearly universal praise. However, on the review aggregate website Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds a 92% approval rating based on 75 reviews with an average rating of 8.4 out of 10. The site's critic consensus says, "This story of a down-on-his-luck boxer is thoroughly predictable, but Stallone's script and stunning performance in the title role brush aside complaints." Again, I don't think it is predictable, given the ending, but okay. Metacritic, which uses a weighted average, assigned the film a score of 70 out of 100, based on 14 critics, indicating generally favourable reviews. The positive online reviews came from the BBC Films website, with both reviewer Almar Havlidison and BBC Online users giving it 5 out of 5 stars. And in Stephen J. Schneider's 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die, Schneider says the film is often overlooked as schmaltz. And that's all I have for the critics' response for that one. So, okay, cool. Now, actually, we've talked about the movie, so all that remains is for us to give our kind of final favourite things and then our conclusions. So we begin, as always, with our favourite character moment and line. So we'll go around one at a time and ask each one individually. So, DK, I'm going to start with you for fun. Who was your favourite character in the movie and why?
I know what everybody's expecting, but I'm going to have to go with Rocky. because he is that, you know, down in his luck type character, and you see his arc. He lifts himself out of where he began, and you know, I do appreciate the rags to, well, not quite riches, but you know, a better way of life for him.
Yeah, who did you think we were expecting you to see, Burgess Meredith?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. What about you, Connor? What was your favourite character in the film and why?
I think I'm going to go Adrian.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, that's, yeah, cool lead.
Yeah, no, Adrian, because I you could say everyone else because of certain moments and performances, but because I think Talia Shire's portrayal is so minimal and the character's portrayal is minimal until the latter half of the story, I just think that in itself... Because if this was, again, a more modern setting, a more modern film, you would eventually people would, their patience would be intolerable and you'd be like, well, what's the point of this character? But with this, you get the story, you don't question it, you don't look at it and think, when's she going to say something? When something gets said, you get that big relief and payoff, and it's satisfying when she does eventually come out of her shell. So for that, it's Adrian. Yeah.
Awesome, I can't fault you for that one. What about you, Sandy? Who was your favourite character and why?
Rocky was my favorite too, because just because he's always going around, like DK said, he lifts himself up, but he also lifts up literally everybody else around him. Like he lifts up the neighborhood, and he's just the heart of.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you are sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
The whole thing. He's the heart in everybody's lives. It kind of brings them to life. What would Polly be or have without Rocky? Burgess, he already hit his prime, but we know how, you know, how he ascends with Rocky through the rest of the films. Like Adrian may have never come out of her shell. Those turtles and Butkus might still be in the pet shop. I'm really reaching here, but you know, he just does. He just lifts everything up in the movie.
Yeah, and I mean, even after Paulie's been a real jerk and Adrian's moved out and everything, he still lets him. You know, he says, "Oh, if you can make money out of my name, make it," and then lets him, you know, sponsor his robe and whatever else. So, because he's always there for other people, I think as well. So, cool. Yeah, similarly, I said Rocky. I did give this a lot of thought and just thought, like, there isn't another character that really overpowers Rocky, and that's kind of, it's good in a way because, you know, it's his film. He's the title character, and I do think he does stand out because it's all about him and his life and his journey. And Stallone, like I said, just imbues him with charm, a reality, and a relatability that makes you really root for him, which again, if you don't do that, the film fails. So I think you've kind of got to give him kudos for that. So yeah. And what was your favorite moment or scene, DK, in the movie?
It's gonna have to be the montage ending up with the street run and the steps.
Oh, cool. Good
stuff. Just inspirational, isn't it?
It's iconic. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Connor?
Briefly, I like the ice skating scene.
Cool. Yeah, that is a good scene too. So many good scenes in this film.
Awesome. That's where you see the difference between the two characters. Like one of you mentioned earlier about the whole, oh, basically Sylvester's like, got more of a body than brains, and Adrian says, oh, I've got more, you know, hair, and say, you know, whatever the exact line, I can't remember, which said so much, but you see the differences between both. And then again, it's just funny seeing her skating and then him just kind of surprisingly not tripping. You see him about to trip at one point, but then him just kind of awkwardly sliding / running on the ice. So yeah, I don't know, it's short and brief, but it was in the first armor place.
Yeah, no, I think that is a good point. And like you said, something I hadn't considered, the idea that even within that scene they're different because she's on skates and he's just running alongside her. So yeah, cool. So what about you, Sandy? What was your favorite moment or scene?
It was actually several, but it was always something I mentioned before, but the walking around the neighborhood scenes, the little things that are happening, the people he's stopping and talking to, for whatever reason, it's just, it invokes that homey feel to me.
Yeah.
It's actually what draws me to the movie more equal to the message and to the inspiration is just that home feeling. You know, when there's movies that you go back to because they just have that feeling, that warm feeling, that's the part that I think did it for this movie. And it's just kind of my favorite scenes, my favorite moments. I was wondering what DK meant that some of the scenes were bogged down, because I don't think it was the street scenes, but I was curious what scenes he meant. But the street scenes, something's always happening. They're talking, they're having a conversation, but also they're just in their familiar streets.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean. I can't remember DK saying that now. Was I just not listening?
I didn't say that it's ponderous sometimes, and I just meant that...
Okay.
Yeah, but that's it.
I would agree with you on that one, actually, to be fair. I do think it's very, like I said to you earlier, deliberately paced is the kind way to put it. And yeah, there's a lot of... It doesn't really hurry, but I think it earns that by the end, because it's all for getting to know these people. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. We'll talk about it later, probably. I really struggled to find a favourite scene, not because there weren't any, but because I was spoilt for choice. But the more I thought about it, the more I realised, like, there's always been one in my head since the first time I saw it as a younger, you know, person. And I think the ending of the fight is just untouchable. Like I said, that just pure moment of punch the air, he's made it, he's done it, even though he doesn't win, which is within itself powerful. He feels like he has, and he's went the distance, and Adrian's there, and he shouts, "I love you." And yeah, again, it's iconic. It hits really, really hard for me, and I don't think anything can beat that, even though there's some great scenes in the movie. Right, so what was your favourite line, if you can remember, DK, from the movie?
It's not really hard to forget, because he's been mentioned several times in this. It's the, "You're gonna eat lightning, and you're gonna crap thunder."
Not a bad impression either, DK. Nice, I like it. What about you, Connor?
I'm actually trying to find the quote, because, again, that impression is brilliant. I'm not going to do an impression. Sonic, I mean, this ain't it at all, but where is it going? I literally just had it. I'll break both arms so they don't work for you.
Oh, everyone just loving the Mickey quotes, I guess. what about you, Sandy? Are you going to give us a Burgess Meredith impression?
No. I liked that. It's kind of a longer quote, but kind of a scene that you mentioned earlier where they're talking and he says, you know, he doesn't think that he can do it, but that he said, "Nobody's ever gone the distance with Creed. And if I can go that distance, you see, and the bell rings and I'm still standing, I'm going to know for the first time in my life, see, that I weren't nothing but just another bum from the neighborhood."
I've got you, by the way, because that's my favorite line, and I have it actually here, word for word.
Oh, yeah. It's just, it's just really, well, it sets the, you know, his sights for the end fight, and it's just, and so inspiring.
It's the whole movie in a nutshell in one line, which is just, it's rare and it's really powerful. But yeah, the whole thing is, "Ah, come on, Adrian, it's true, I was nobody. But that don't matter either, you know, because I was thinking, it really don't matter if I lose this fight. It really don't matter if this guy opens my head either, because all I want to do is go the distance. Nobody's ever gone the distance with Creed. And if I can go that distance, you see, and that bell rings and I'm still standing, I'm going to know for the first time in my life, see, that I weren't just another bum from the neighbor." Yeah, very good dialogue. Stallone's a good writer, man, for all the crap that he gets. So that will round up almost everything except the business of our conclusion and our score out of 5 stars, as we always do. Let's see. My conclusion's quite long, so I probably want to finish with that one. So we'll come to you first, Sandy, for your conclusion and score, please.
I gave this an 8 out of 10, though I wouldn't... Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, we go out of 5.
That's right, I forgot.
4 out of 5.
Yeah, I mean, 4.5 out of 5. It's
wow, okay.
Not the best movie I've ever seen, but
big
it's
difference.
Really, really good. And as an art piece for me, the way it makes me feel and the fact that it does it every single time I watch it is why it's so great, because everything culminated into making me feel that way. So that's why I think so highly of it.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you on that one. That's fantastic. 4.5, very good score. Connor, what about you? Conclusion and score, please.
I think I'd give it a 5 out of 5. Close, wow, to being a 10.
It mainly because it's just details that I never would have noticed when I watched it, like when I was younger. And again, there's lack of boxing. The boxing's actually only in the last 14 minutes of the runtime. It's crazy that very little boxing's in it. But again, it's just the world building. It's the realistic approach to the script and the writing. And again, it's blooming Sylvester Stallone's film. Luckily, we have gone beyond just praising Stallone. It's the first of a really strong franchise. Minus Rocky V, I've liked every single installment. And again, the franchise continues to get stronger. But it all is because of the original, you might say. And it's because of this one. So this one's amazing.
Brilliant. Yeah. DK, what about you? Do you have a conclusion and a score?
Like I mentioned earlier, looking at the Stallone today, I'm always amazed that this film exists. It's a work of art, really, to be fair. And considering Stallone not only acts his ass off, but wrote this thing, is, to me, oft times unbelievable. Avildsen gives us a gritty fairy tale story, not quite with the perfect happy ending that everyone expects, but with one that the characters themselves deserve. It's backed up by career-defining performances by Young, Shia, Weathers, Meredith, and the aforementioned Stallone, and a really unforgettable Conti soundtrack that's now iconic. Rocky is a feel-good film before those words lost all meaning. And I'm going to give it 4.8. I'm going to be the awkward one today.
Well, you're not going to be the only one, but okay.
Adrian was also very awkward.
Adrian was?
Very awkward.
I get you. Oh, terrible jokes, Andy. Terrible. Okay, I'm distracted because I'm trying to come up with, because I know what my score is, so I'm coming up with the final score as well. But anyway, my conclusion and my score, I said it's a truly iconic movie that set the template for sports movies, underdog stories, slice of life drama, and a franchise that's still going strong after almost 50 years, 6 movies, 3 spin-off films, and 2 director's cuts. As is often the case with older movies, there are some moments that haven't aged well, but you can't deny the power of the story Stallone wrote or the impact by that final bell. I comment on pacing a lot, and this one leaves me torn. It does seem perhaps a little slow, deliberate, as I've said, and overlong, but I recognise that's pretty much all necessary character scenes. Perhaps controversially, I do think that as the series goes on and introduces more cheese, the films get not necessarily better, but definitely more enjoyable and more fun. That said, this is the original, and it does the groundwork to make the sequels matter. There's also so much iconic dialogue, stellar performances, stunning direction, great music, and so much bloody heart. Watching it back, it's almost surprising how little the supporting cast seems to feature, but you can see why they got more to do later. Key dramatic scenes with Adrian, Paulie, and Mickey are all the best acted and most impactful in the franchise, and I've always loved that the ending isn't about being a fairy story of winning against impossible odds, but it's about proving to yourself that you can stand up and be counted, and ultimately it's about being brave in all ways, including self-actualizing and accepting love. A film worthy of going the distance, but now I really want to keep going and watch the sequels. And I racked my brain and ultimately did come up with a very Sandy-esque score of 4.25 out of 5. So I also was awkward to take. So putting those together, dividing them by 4 to give us our, and then rounding up, because why not, to give us our final score then, gives Rocky a final score of 4.6 out of 5. Pretty bloody good, I would say. Can't really say fairer than that.
Doesn't quite win on points, but there you go.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think it's going to be, it's not going to be the highest of the cinema classics, but it's up there. And like I said, it's above 4.5. It's not quite at 5, but it's good. Very good. Fantastic high score, I would say. We'll conclude another trip through cinema classics of yesteryear. We will be back next month with another particular cinematic treat, also back in the 1970s, and with a little bit of an extra treat to boot, but you'll have to just wait and see what that's going to be all about. So in the meantime, it just remains for me to thank my guests for joining me. Sandra, thanks for coming back. Did you enjoy it, and where can people find you on the internet?
I did enjoy it very much. I'm having a fine time being pretty much off the internet. I get my news from you now. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the Zamboni driver that held fast to his $10 and won over Rocky. He was the real winner of the movie.
Yeah, shouting down the minutes. 5 minutes. Absolutely.
And that look Rocky gives him. It was so good.
Right? Connor, I know you've got a lot of places people can find you. And did you have fun here today?
Yeah, no, of course. I have fun every time I'm on here. Thank you, as always, for having me. Again, cheap plug, but I'm Ben Connor from the Nerd Bible Podcast. You can follow us across Pacey Sheep. You know, you guys found us on YouTube. You know how social media works, but, you know, Facebook, X, sorry, Twitter, Instagram, all the other social medias will be in the link down below. You know, you can find me on there and my buddy George for more news, rambles, reviews, opinions, and, you know, whatever drama seems to be happening week by week. But yeah, that's all I'm going to plug.
I will say, you really should go over there if you're listening to this and you're enjoying, like, films and pop culture generally, and sort of, because the Nerd Bible Podcast deserves more views, dang it, and more subscribers and people actually getting involved week on week. They release something every week and it's always fantastic and gets me talking anyway about random things. This week I was talking about the Disney Plus MCU series, for example. So if that sounds like something that would interest you, head on over and check out the Nerd Bible Podcast on Piercy Sheep on YouTube. Yeah, that's your free plug for you, Connor.
Much appreciated. Much appreciated.
$10.
Yeah, next time it'll be $10. Yeah.
Yeah, next time I'm going to have your symbol on the back of a robe. DK, I don't need to ask where you are. You're the same places as I am. You don't really go anywhere else, I'm guessing.
No. If you've not checked it out yet, on the other end of the spectrum to Rocky, our latest Cult Classics episode is Waxwork, so please go check that out.
Yeah, that was just released a few days ago, so do go check out Waxwork if you have a chance. And even if you don't know the movie, it's fascinating to hear of, because I didn't know it till DK told me about it and hearing about it from the podcast, and now I really want to see it, because my word, it sounds batshit. It does, though. So yeah, as they will always be back with more cult classics, cinema classics, and just silver screen regular recipe, so keep an eye on us on our social medias and on our YouTubes to see what will be coming your way. And hopefully, if I'm editing this, which I will be, on screen, I will remember to edit in a little screen on YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube, to show all the places you can find us on the internet, all the various social medias and such. But if you aren't able to watch on YouTube and you're listening to this, or you're just not paying attention to your screen, you can always find our link tree in the episode descriptions, which will also direct you to all of those places you can find us. Or alternatively, you can always just leave us a comment on this video if you're watching on YouTube, or, you know, hit us up on Facebook, or email us if you want at mwilsonba1982@gmail.com, I believe. But again, that email address is in the episode description. So yeah, we're going to be back very soon for more fun, more sort of film frolics. And in the meantime, yeah, do you want to sign us out of this one, DK?
Oh, yes. In the words of Arnie, we'll be back.
Yo, Adrian! We did it!
You've been listening to the Silver Scream Podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Additional material and behind-the-scenes sections by DK. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found via the Linktree page listed in the episode's description. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcast Network. You can listen to this and our sister podcasts on all good podcast providers by searching for Silver Scream Podcast or Mike's Podcasts. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share far and wide. Thank you for joining us. Come back next time for more movie magic, and hopefully this can be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.